Welcome to the Simple Development Systems Podcast, where you'll be learning all about small shop fundraising and how to build a donor-focused development department from the ground up. Here's your host, publisher of the Grow Report, Pamela Grow.
Hi, I'm Pamela Grow of Simple Development Systems, and today I am honored to introduce you to Andrea McManus, CFRE. Andrea is president of the Development Group in Calgary. And if you're a follower of Movie Mondays for Nonprofits, you'll remember her. I really loved her video, 9 Signs of a Philanthropic Culture to Help You Strengthen the Culture at Your Organization. And I understand that the viewers really did too. Creating a culture of philanthropy is the basis for a strong fundraising culture. And in my membership program, building a culture of philanthropy is a focal point. And a lot of times for younger organizations, it's a point that can be easy to get across. But today we're going to be talking about those organizations who might be kind of enmeshed in a dysfunctional culture. And we'll be talking about steps that you can take either in your role as a development director or as an executive director to empower your organization and lead them out of the wilderness, I guess we could say. Welcome, Andrea, and thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Did I pronounce your name right?
You did.
Good. I actually have a friend who goes by Andrea.
I get everything. Call me Andrea, so I'm fine with that.
Well, maybe you could describe for me kind of some steps that say an organization could begin to take.
Sure. I think that I was intrigued in your introduction that, and in fact, I made a note of it because you said creating a strong philanthropic culture is a foundation for having a strong fundraising culture. And that it was really well said, because that's a subtle distinction that we don't often pick up on. So one of the things that I challenge fundraisers to do, and I am a proud fundraiser, as you are, and I'm sure everybody who's listening, but I think we talk too much about fundraising and not enough about philanthropy, and we lose the distinction between the two. So a fundraising culture and a philanthropic culture are not the same thing. So one of the things at the top of my list is to start just by changing your language and talking more about philanthropy as the outcome of fundraising, and fundraising as the enabler of philanthropy. But if you just think about the two words, fundraising and philanthropy, and particularly when you're working with wards, I can practically see people shivering in their seats when I talk But when you talk about philanthropy, it's a different conversation. So that's just a one really easy thing that we can do to help break down those barriers and break out of that silo and, as you said, come out of the wilderness. And I think a couple of other things. While you're doing that, in my experience, you know, the literature will tell you that culture can take 7 years to change. But in my experience, I've seen culture change overnight, and that can be for good, but it also can be maybe not so good. And so, but I will say, as I mentioned to you earlier, and I realize this is a gross generalization, but in my experience, organizations that have a dysfunctional culture usually have a dysfunctional board. And that is not to lay the blame at the foot of board members and volunteers. It's a blame that I think it's something that we all share collective responsibility for. And so I really believe if you're going to have that philanthropic culture, it has to start at the top. And you may recall in the video, I talked about the one organization in the room that had 100% board giving. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a very powerful story. I tell it over and over again. And those weren't 6, 7, 8 figure gifts. They were all small gifts, because those people were, many of them were below the poverty line. But that's what philanthropy is all about. It's not charity. It's philanthropy. Everybody is a philanthropist. You don't have to make, a large gift. I mean, certainly there is transformational philanthropy, but we, you know, if we recognize that everyone who gives is a philanthropist, it does change the conversation. So if you're struggling with your board, and this is one of the places that you need to start, one of my favorite strategies in working with difficult board situations is to find a champion on that board. And because, you know, often as the fundraiser, and particularly in smaller organizations, you may not even have much access to the board, let alone be, you know, telling them that they need to give and need to be involved in fundraising. But if you can get somebody on your board or a senior volunteer who understands what you're talking about and is willing to play that role, that's going to jump you ahead in leaps and bounds, because it's that peer-to-peer thing that we do, you know, in our major gift work. I think that's an important thing that we can all do is that is available to all of us. A couple of other things that I think are fairly easy for us to do is to connect our donors to our board members and our staff members. And not just by sending out in your newsletter a profile of a donor, but when you meet with a donor, you know, bring them on site and introduce them to your staff member and make sure they know at least three of your board members by name and really broaden that relationship and embed that relationship in the organization. If we do that, then it does become about the relationship and it's not just the relationship that the donor has with you as the fundraiser, because that is just going to make sure that, you know, you stay in that silo if that's what you've got, which is all too common. I like to put everybody's name in my action plan. Mm-hmm. And with their knowledge, of course, not with their knowledge. But when we do strategic development planning, and I think we're, as fundraisers, we're probably really great at doing annual development plans. There's so many templates out there, and, you know, what are we going to do this year? What's it going to look like? What's our retention rate going to be? How many new donors in the pipeline? We're great at looking at it from year to year. But I think if we want to really focus on philanthropy and building that culture, mm-hmm. we need to look at it as a long-term and strategic activity, just like the strategic plan of the organization. So we like to do 3 to 5 year strategic development plans. And you can't identify exactly things, you know, 3 to 5 years out, but you can define where you want to be generally and the kind of culture you want to have and the kind of relationship that you want to have with your donors. And if you promote it that way, that helps to build that longer term philanthropic culture as opposed to the fundraising culture driving the philanthropic culture. It should be the other way around, like you said. So when you do that, when you're doing a strategic development plan, just like if you're doing a strategic plan for an organization, you're not going to do it yourself. You're going to include others in it. So include other people in your strategic development planning. It's just a great opportunity to have some really important educational but also thought-provoking and maybe boundary-changing conversations with both staff and volunteer leadership of your organization.
Oh, I love the way you phrase that. Boundary-changing. You know, you mentioned connecting board members and donors. What are some other ways that you can work with board members to kind of to empower them? I mean, a lot of times consultants or the executive director, the first thing they start with their board is practically to ask them to turn over the Rolodex. Not that anyone uses a Rolodex anymore, but and I've always thought that's like the worst thing you can do.
And you know, if you do that, well, you're not going to get it. I mean, at best, you might get some transactional gifts out of it. But I think that we need to treat our board members like we treat our donors. And while I believe that the board, I believe deeply that the board has a collective responsibility, both in governance and in fundraising, and I would argue that I believe being involved in fundraising is a strategic and long-term responsibility of the board. We all too often expect that every board member is going to do the same thing, and we don't take the time to explain the giving cycle to them. And so, you know, how many times have you said to a board member, you know, I'd like you to be, you need to be engaged in fundraising. We need to raise money or we're going to have to close our doors. And that board member says, oh, Pamela, I can do anything, but I can't ask for money, but I can do anything else.
Right.
And you can just see the fear in their eyes. And then you say, well, great. You know, could you maybe just make a couple of calls, 3 calls a month for us to thank a donor? Oh, yeah, sure, I can do that. Or could you perhaps, you know, open a few doors, provide some introductions? Oh, yes, I can definitely do that. Could you maybe host some people for dinner at your house and we could come and talk about the organization? Oh, sure, I can do that, but I can't ask for money. And so we're not, you know, all of those things. I mean, if you think about that whole cycle, the asking for the gift is one tiny, tiny little part. And that's where they go. And it scares the daylights out of them. Most of them. Yeah, most of them scares the daylights out of them. And I also think that we, the other thing we can do is by connecting our board members to not just our donors, but also to our recipients and to the mission. And they move away, because when they say, I can't ask for money, they're putting themselves in the middle. And it's because it's about them. And mm-hmm. they're embarrassed, or they feel that they're hitting people up, or, you know, they're afraid they're going to be rejected. And that's because they're putting themselves personally in the middle of the activity. And it's really not about them. So if you get to know your board members one-on-one and what motivates them to support the causes that they support and how do they feel when they do that, and connect them as much as possible to the people that the organization is actually helping, it helps to break down that it's about me. They don't think that consciously, I don't think, but it's just sort of the, and maybe Canadians are a little more reluctant to engage in that than Americans, but I don't think so. And
oh no,
but I think it's because we let them inadvertently put themselves in the middle, and they see themselves as the broker of a transaction as opposed to the broker of dreams and better lives.
Oh, I love the way you said that.
Thanks.
But it's so true. It's so true. And I think, well, that's part of the whole, I think what everyone struggles with.
Yeah.
Is that you're not walking up with your hand out. You're really giving someone an opportunity.
Yes.
To create a better world.
Yeah, but you have to get them to see that, but not to see it. You have to get them to feel that and to understand it. And the best way that I've found to do that is to get them to talk about their own giving and why they do that. And you know, well, how does that make you feel when you do that? Oh, and you'll get words like, I feel really proud, I feel like I'm helping, I feel like I'm making change, I'm paying back, I'm paying forward. As opposed to when you ask them about fundraising, and a whole different set of words. And so then you can build on that. You can build on that warm, fuzzy feeling of philanthropy versus that cold, transactional feeling of fundraising. And that's what we do. I mean, we want them to help us, but we want them to grow philanthropy in our organizations and generally.
Exactly. And can I ask you, what, how do you typically go about ensuring that 100% board giving?
Right.
We did a survey recently, and then that came up quite a bit.
Did you find many organizations that had it?
That no, that many people said that that not everyone on their board gave.
Well, I mean, I am seeing more and more organizations where they are getting it. They mm-hmm. understand that they have to walk the talk, lead by example, whatever, you know, however you want to refer to it. I personally really dislike phrases like give, get, or get off. Because mm-hmm. I just think it's kind of crass and maybe disrespectful. And even time, talent, and treasure, I know we use those, but that's kind of almost trite. I think it comes down to, you know, yes, you give your time here, but it takes time and money to fulfill our mission. It takes time and money to help for the people that we're helping, the change that we're making, whatever service we're providing in the community. And donors generally are so much more knowledgeable and have higher expectations and take accountability seriously. They ask these questions, and you would never want a board member to be in a position where somebody asked them if they gave and that board member said, no, I give my time here. You can just do, you know, as a fundraiser, you can do a little role play around that. You know, in 30 seconds, and it gets the message across mm-hmm. very strongly. So, I mean, a lot of people volunteer, but it takes both. It takes both. But I also think it's not something you can impose on a board if that is not the practice. And you have to have, you have to give board members the full, you know, an opportunity to talk about it fully and frankly. And I don't know about you, Pamela, but I'm often called in as a consultant to have this conversation with boards or to include it in board training. And you have to respect what they say and how they feel about it, because this might be a shift for them. But once you get to that point, you know, one of the things that I found works well is making it one of your top three philanthropic priorities while you sit on this board. And people are usually more comfortable with that. And again, you're using the word philanthropy.
Oh, which, I like that.
Yeah.
And I have come across it, and I've actually used monthly giving. I've found to be really helpful.
With
one organization, we actually started the organization's monthly giving program with the board. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Yeah, I mean, that really gives them an opportunity to do that whole lead by example.
Yeah, it worked out beautifully. We had, well, it a situation where I think about maybe 70% of the board gave, and we ended up with 100% board giving, and I would say a good 60% of the board gave monthly, and they gave more than they had in the past.
Yeah,
and it was just a nice way to start it off.
Yeah, that is the beauty of monthly giving, though, isn't it?
I love monthly giving.
Yeah, it's the best thing. So you know, sometimes when I talk about connecting board members to your donors, I've been to lots of board meetings where they give the board a list of maybe, well, I was at a board orientation last week, and they gave us a list of people who have given $5,000 or more in the last month. And I asked if that comes to the board on a regular basis, and they don't. And I said, well, you know, as a new board member in this organization, I'd like to see this, because I might know some of these people, and it's an opportunity for me to just say thank you the next time I see them. And so we're going to start doing that. But to take it one step further, instead of just saying Andrea McManus gave us $500 or $100 or $5,000 or whatever it is, maybe take one or two of your donors and really do a deep dive into why they gave to your particular organization, how they came to be connected with your organization, and particularly if there was a board member who opened that door or who played a role in it. So how, you know, talk about not just the gift, but talk about the motivation and the relationship. And so make your board members feel it and really appreciate it, because it's not just about the dollar amount and the number of zeros there. It's about why, and it's you know, raising that level of awareness and then ultimately appreciation.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, I can see we've actually gone over, and I appreciate you giving your time today.
Well, thank you.
For my readers, before we go, how can our readers get in touch with you?
I'm on email. I'm on LinkedIn. I tweet.
You're on Twitter?
I'm hit and miss, but I'm probably more on than off, but I go through stages.
Oh, yay. I'll have to connect on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm a big Twitter fan.
So if you just, go onto my website at thedevelopmentgroup.ca, you can connect with me through there.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about something I really love to talk about.